Your Excellency, Reverend Fathers, dear friends in Christ, as always, it's a special privilege for me to address this conference, which I consider to be one of the most important given in the United States. And I've chosen a topic which I believe is extremely needed today, namely, how to go from defeat to victory. In his great novel, The Brothers Karamazovs, Dostoevsky puts the following words in the mouth of Ivan, one of the characters. The earth is soaked from its crust to its very center with the tears of humanity, unquote. It is hard to express the tragic question of every single human being who is born to raise. Why should we suffer? Deep down, we have such a longing for happiness. We strive for it with every fiber of our being. And so many of us, very many of us, are disappointed, disillusioned. Why is it that life promises so much and then ends in bitterness and despair? Why? Having taught for 37 years in a secular university, that is to say, in the lion's den, I know that one of the greatest difficulties that students and people encounter is, you claim that God exists. You claim that he's good and all-powerful. And I'm going to refute you. Suppose that he's good. How can he stand the horrible suffering that human beings experience throughout their lives? Therefore, he cannot be good. You claim that he's all-powerful. But if he's good, then obviously he should put an end to these meaningless tortures, and he doesn't do it. Conclusion, God does not exist. No serious metaphysician can escape from this dilemma. Can a satisfactory answer be found? The gamut of human suffering is almost illimited. There's no particle of the human body that cannot cause excruciating pains. From his birth to his death, man is exposed to pains and diseases and suffering. As Pascal, the French philosopher of the 17th century, wrote, quotes, a vapor, a drop of water, suffices to kill him. You and I have no guarantee that within an hour from now we'll still be alive. Physical pain is terrible, but I do not believe that it is necessarily the worst of all pains. What about psychological pains? What about the pains of people who are not loved, who are rejected, who are looked down upon, who are considered to be nobody, who do not feel that they deserve to exist because there's absolutely nobody who says to them, I rejoice that you're alive. Rivalry between children and siblings can cause severe pains. There are parents who suffer tortures because they know that their child is rejected by other children. And I'm sorry to say, children can be terribly cruel to other children, particularly if they have some sort of physical deficiency or some sort of physical weakness. The brave new world in which we live does not see any end to the horrors that are taking place. You just need to read the newspaper and you find out that every single day there are millions of people in tears, absolutely shaken by sorrow because they have lost a loved one. And it all seems to be so meaningless. Why? A young child can already harbor bitterness because he's rejected. Just a few days ago, I usually watch French television for about 10 minutes every day. A man cold-bloodedly shot 8 people that were having some sort of city meeting and wounded 19 others. And then he was arrested and said, why did you do that? because he said, I'm a failure. I'm a loser. I have never succeeded in anything that I've tried to do, and I take my revenge on humanity. And then, in some mysterious way, as the police was absent-minded for a moment, he threw himself out of the window and committed suicide. Now, he did not want to, he wanted to commit suicide in any case, but before doing it, he wanted to make sure that he was going to harm other people, a world that has not given him a chance of succeeding. Now, of course, the world in which we live, and I'm speaking particularly of the Western world, the rich world, is a world where the thing that counts is to achieve, to succeed, to make money, to be famous. This is what counts. How you are rated. What have you achieved? You know, sometimes perfect non-entities die, and then the New York Times is going to have a long, long obituary to tell you all the things that they have done in business and how much money they have acquired. And then, of course, there are secret sufferings, sufferings that nobody knows about, and which might be the very worst. When you read the lives of saints, and one of the blessings of my Catholic education was that already when I was a small child, the nuns acquainted me with the lives of saints. And I knew, ultimately, these are my role models. These are the people that I should look up to. And then what do you discover? A saint is canonized, a saint is glorified, and then you read their lives and you find out that there is the cross, the crown of thorn, humiliation, suffering, rejection. A saint is essentially a victor, a conqueror who is placed facing all these difficulties and always manages to give the divine answer, the supernatural answer. From the very beginning of the world, people have raised the question, why should we suffer? And you will notice that again and again, they have tried to find a solution. I found the key. I'm going to eliminate suffering. You know, the promise of the detestable new age is once again we're going to create a universe in which all tears will be dried and everybody will be well off, and then truly life will be worth living. The mistake is to treat suffering and evil as a problem. And I mean by problem an objective difficulty. You have a difficulty and you try to solve it, and once you have found the solution, the problem is solved. And then you turn to another problem. This is typical, for example, of science or mathematics. You have a problem, you don't know how to go to the moon. Now we have solved the problem. We have gone to the moon, and then the next is to say to go to Mars or to Jupiter, so God knows where. It's solved. And you will notice that problems are outside of myself. Buddha, the Buddha, saw suffering as a problem. And it is his claim that actually the problem can be solved. We suffer, he says, because we constantly have cravings and desires that cannot be fulfilled, or we cannot fulfill. There's a famous sentence, if you have 100 loves, you have 100 sorrow. If you have 99 loves, you have 99 sorrows. And it goes down and down and down and down. And then if you have one love, you have one sorrow. And if you have no love, you have no sorrow. Therefore, eliminate desire. Detach yourself totally. All desires should be totally eliminated. And then one very fine day, you will find yourself free from suffering and you enter the nirvana. You take Marxism. Marxism sees suffering as a problem. And what is a problem? Injustice, economic injustice. Some people have too much and other people have too little. Now, in other words, if you introduce a Marxistic system and the state would be the only possessor of wealth and riches and then would distribute it, then you're going to have the paradise for the workers. No, unfortunately, we now know that the paradise for the workers is called Gulag. We know about this now. But I mean, his aim was to create a world in which suffering is illuminated, totally eliminated. There is no more suffering because, no, of course, another mistake, a tragic mistake of Marx is to believe the only type of suffering is poverty. Totally forgetting that the holiest people who have existed, namely the saints, chose poverty. They did not try to make money, they tried to serve others. But this is something that I'm not going to go into. What I would like to say is that suffering is not a problem. It's not something which can be solved in the sense of saying, now look my book, read my book, and you have all the answers, and suffering will be eliminated. It is what I call a mystery. Not a supernatural mystery, like the Holy Trinity or the presence of Christ in the Eucharist, but a mystery in the sense, number one, that you could never find on this earth a final answer which is of such nature that you say, no, I know it all. I solved it. And number two, because mystery is something in which I myself am personally involved. It is not something outside of myself. You will notice that when we speak about evil, evil is there. Evil are, you know, the Bin Laden, bad enough. You know, evil is outside of myself, and I'm the innocent sheep suffering from evil. And it never occurs to me that I myself am involved in it. And unless I fight evil in myself, my chances of overcoming evil in others is very, very small. Let us turn for a very brief moment to Greek tragedies. Because they're called tragedies, they're all referring to suffering, sometimes terrible suffering. But there are two things that I would like to say very briefly about Greek tragedy. One of them is that it is a punishment for arrogance. You might recall the famous tragedy of Sophocles called Ajax. And now it's almost a quote, but Ajax says at one point, I know that they're gods. I'm not going to ask for their help, because if I succeeded, I would not have the full credit. I want to achieve success on my own, unaided. And the punishment of the god is he's struck by madness. A very good punishment for metaphysical arrogance. There's also a dimension in Greek tragedy of fate. Oedipus kills his father, not knowing that it is his father. He marries his mother, not knowing that she is his mother. And the children and the family is cursed. Now, in other words, the gods at times seem to target a particular individual and lead him to his ruin. In the Old Testament, we reach a much higher level. And it is not surprising because of the ultimate unity between Old and New Testament, the Old constantly pointing to the New. Suffering is a punishment for sin. And what is sin? A revolt against God. This is essentially the essence of sin. Today in our world, number one, the new fashion is that we cannot sin. I heard recently, a few days ago, that a Catholic school in New Rochelle, where I live, that one of the nuns said to the children, one cannot commit a mortal sin. Murder is an exception, but apart from that, you cannot commit a mortal sin. What a comfortable feeling. This is what Catholic kids are taught today. Now, sin is to turn against God. Of course, in the Old Testament, the most striking example of suffering is Job. And what is so baffling about Job is that he claims that he's sinless. His friend said, you have sinned, and this is why you're punished. He said, no, I'm innocent, I'm guiltless. And nevertheless, he suffers. And God says to him, oh, dare you question me? This is something that I have permitted. Who are you to challenge me and ask me why? And then, of course, comes the New Testament. And it is my claim that it is in the New Testament, illumined by the infallible teaching of the Roman Catholic Church and the Orthodox Church as far as dogmas are concerned. It is my claim that it is in the New Testament, and New Testament alone that we're going to find not an answer to suffering, but a light illuminating suffering and showing that it has a profound meaning. I'm such a sissy that I cannot stand the prick of a needle if it is meaningless. Why? But if you say to me, suffering has a meaning, and thanks to God's grace and to his holy teaching, I discover the meaning of suffering, the whole picture changes radically. Just last week, we relived the condemnation of Christ to death, his atrocious death on Golgotha, leading to the resurrection last Sunday. Now, the very moment that you realize that the Savior of the world, the second person of the Holy Trinity, the Holy One par excellence, chose suffering, excruciating pains, and death in order to save us, you certainly have an inkling of the ultimate link existing between the meaning of suffering as an expression of ultimate love. That is what Christianity offers us. That is the most precious gift that you can imagine, because every single time that you are tortured by the question of, say, why? If I truly understood what God is sending me, you will understand that it is a unique opportunity for love to conquer and to manifest itself. Today, we live in a world which is so de-Christianized, and I don't hesitate to say so, because unfortunately, we know that even priests and nuns are no longer